This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Tommy Orange's new novel, Wandering Stars, expands the story of the Bear Shield Red Feather family from his first Pulitzer-nominated book, There, There. Orange takes readers back to the Sand Creek Massacre, where the family's journey with pain, loss, substance abuse, and identity begins. It also fills in their contemporary connection to Oakland, California, and its effects on three brothers being raised by their grandmothers. Author Tommy Orange joins us after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A National Center for Native Radio and TV Broadcasters is leading an effort to establish an alert code for missing and endangered adults. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
In 2022, more than 10,000 Indigenous people were reported missing to the FBI. That's a higher rate of disappearance than the general population. That's why Native Public Media is petitioning the FCC to create the Missing and Endangered Persons event code, similar to what the Amber Alert is for missing children. Loris Taylor is the CEO of Native Public Media and a member of Arizona's Hopi Nation.
Native Americans face a crisis. We're three times more likely to experience violent crime. And there's been a wave of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls for a very long time.
She says a dedicated national alert would help law enforcement and communities locate these individuals. On March 14th, the FCC will discuss the proposed alert code. If approved, a public comment period on its proposed rules would follow. I'm Caleb Radel.
In California, a notification system for Native people marked its one-year implementation in January. The Feather Alert is used to notify the public and law enforcement about missing Native Americans. Tribal leaders, law enforcement, and California state lawmakers are reviewing the program for more effective use. Assemblymember James Ramos authored legislation creating the alert. He says it's a great tool. Ramos says in its first year, the notification system had some positive results, but he says it needs some tweaks.
The Feather Alert follows the Amber Alert here in the state of California. And one of the complexities of it is now you include tribal governments into the component. So we created the law. It's the first year that it went through. We understand that there was five different times that it was requested to be implemented. Three of those were denied. Two of them were implemented. Those two that were implemented, those individuals were found and brought back home safely.
There are questions over why the other three were not implemented, being raised with the California Highway Patrol, which administers the system.
Working with the CHP, the California Highway Patrol, who's open, the Commissioner Duray, is open to criticism, open to make it a finer piece of arsenal for those to bring back the missing.
A bill to make changes to the Feather Alert with input from tribes and law enforcement is included in a package of bills Ramos recently announced for 2024.
And it's unique because there's a lot of bills that pass in the California state legislature that never get brought back up to fine-tune them. Again, Indian people are leading the way. After a year, we're already bringing this bill back up to fine-tune it. I think we're leading the way of how some other bills could be fine-tuned that affect California's people.
Ramos says part of the challenge with the Feather Alert is making the general public aware of it and bridging communication gaps among law enforcement and tribes. The issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people has been a priority of Ramos since his election in 2018, becoming the first California Native American to serve in the state legislature. This story is a collaboration with First Nations Experience Television with support from the Public Welfare Foundation. The virtual panel Accelerating Empowerment of Indigenous Women and Girls is planned for March 12 to address violence against Indigenous women in the Americas. It will feature speakers from Brazil, Guatemala, Peru, and the U.S. The event's part of a forum during a session of the UN Commission on the Status of Women. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB, who support this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, your National Humanities Medal Awarded radio show and podcast. A new novel by Tommy Orange weaves together the history of the boarding school era as witnessed by the ancestors to the characters we first met in his best-selling debut novel, They're There. The story in Wandering Stars, which just came out, takes us from the devastating Sand Creek Massacre through the founding of the Carlisle Indian School and into urban Indian life in Oakland, California. It then continues with the three Red Feather boys and their grandmothers, Opal and Jackie, after the big powwow in Oakland. They navigate the pain, poverty, and addiction that define and connect the characters and inform us about elements of contemporary urban Native existence. Tommy Orange, a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma, joins us here on NAC Today. And we hope you will, too. Call us. Talk with Tommy at 1-800-996-2888. And with that, let me now introduce our featured guest on our show, author Tommy Orange. He is a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. He spends most of his time in Oakland. However, he is joining us today from New York, where he's promoting his new novel, Wandering Stars. And in addition to being a celebrated author, he's also a teacher in the MFA program at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Hello, Tommy, and welcome to our show today.
Hello, Sean. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, Tommy. Now, when you joined our show back in 2019 to talk about the debut of They're There, you shared that your main goal for writing a novel was to get into the MFA program there at IAIA. And, well, that all worked out according to plan. So what did you use for motivation to write this follow-up?
So I actually started the follow-up in March of 2018. So There came out in June of 2018. I didn't know when I finished writing There that I was going to write a follow-up. But just a couple months before it came out, I got this title stuck in my head. And initially it was just kind of the aftermath of what happens at the end of There. And then this whole historical piece happened, and I had to try to find a way to make those two things work together.
So this was definitely in your mind for quite a while, and then you put it all together. It just was published last week. Well, we got a lot to talk about, Tommy, because this new book, it's a very complex story. You have a lot of characters, and each one offers a very unique perspective, and then you've got these multiple subplots and related themes. There's a lot of working parts. So let's start with the historical context. I mean, did you have all that information just like in your back pocket when you started the writing, or did it require a lot of research?
I didn't intend on ever writing historical fiction. And then I was in Sweden for the Swedish translation of There in 2019. It would have been spring 2019. So maybe before we talk, because I think we talked over the summer of 2019. And I was at a museum there. The people who brought me there, my publisher, invited me to this museum because they had Cheyenne stuff at, you know, behind glass, and sort of were giving me this tour, like, we know we shouldn't have it, but we do have it, so you want to see it. And I saw this newspaper clipping there and said Southern Cheyennes at St. Augustine, 1875. And I had known enough about my tribal history to know that we were never in Florida. And so I just dug into what that history was and found out that the this was the origin story for the boarding schools. The blueprint for the boarding schools was 3 years prisoners of war from Southern Cheyenne, Arapaho, Caddo, Kiowa. All these different prisoners were
you back on. All right, Tommy, sorry about that. A little bit of a technical glitch there, but you were talking about just the historical context there and the history there of the Southern Cheyenne and the Florida history and how that led into the boarding school. And one of the things I find so fascinating about your writing is how you're able to present these different perspectives in different characters. And you even include two chapters about Richard Henry Pratt, the founder of Carlisle Linden School. And what I find really interesting is that you portray him as a flawed person, but at the same time, he's somewhat sympathetic. And he believes that like what he was doing, you know, at the time was kind of the best solution. And that kind of goes against a lot of the narratives we hear about today with the boarding school era. And it's one of the things I admire about you as a writer. You're not afraid to push back against contemporary perspectives. Why is that, Tommy?
I am so sorry, Sean. I missed the first part of your question. I think my internet is being weird. I just paid for premium internet in my hotel room, but it keeps cutting out. I think we may want to switch to phone because that'll be more consistent.
Okay.
Is that all right?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if you want to, just maybe while you're switching, just talk more about the chapters about Richard Henry Pratt and how he's viewed as kind of a character, you know, conflicted character.
Yeah, so I did a lot of research for about Fort Marion and about Pratt and about that period of time. And it was really striking to me. Yeah, sure, Pratt is sort of the figurehead for boarding schools and he stands in for the evil of what happened at boarding schools. And I certainly don't write about him in a way that denies that he was a big.
Mm-hmm. For folks who have not had a chance to read this book yet, Wandering Stars by Tommy Orange, it just came out last week. It's published by Penguin Random House. Well, anyway, you know, the Richard Henry Pratt character, he's viewed from a very interesting perspective. And then what I also like with your other characters is sometimes their perspectives are written through the first person and it's them telling their own stories. Other times it's a third person perspective. And talk a little bit about that, how you present these different perspectives from these different viewpoints and just what went into the writing there.
So I use POV changes as part of my revision process. So if I have a character that first comes out in third person, let's say past tense third person, that's a little bit more removed and a little bit less, has less immediacy. And maybe I want in revision, if I'm finding that I need to push the character more or find out more about them, I'll move them to first person and present tense. And that's, you know, it's a pretty technical thing to do. It's kind of a tedious task. But sometimes when you don't feel, you know, when you're not having a good writing day, doing technical things can be a good way to keep working. And what I'll find is when I change the POV, it'll generate new language. And I'll find something out about the character that I'm writing about that I didn't think of before. So I shift around with all my characters. I shift tense and I shift POV until I land on what I feel is the right choice for that character and what's happening in the book.
And Tommy, when you shift around like that, is it more challenging for you to offer the perspective of a historical Native American character as opposed to a contemporary one? Because you manage both types of characters.
Like Charles Starr is the character that kind of goes, the chapters are kind of talking to each other, the one with Richard Henry Pratt and Charles Starr. And they're both third person. And I think I did find it easier to write third person for historical. I think I would have been a little bit harder to do first person for, especially for this historical Native voice. I did feel third person was the choice that I could do.
All right. Tommy, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back and we're going to talk more about your book and about your life. So listeners, stay with us. You're listening to Native America Calling. Even though the presidential frontrunners are all but decided, there are some other substantial decisions coming out of the biggest single day of the primary election campaigns. We'll see which way the political winds blow and what it could mean for Native voters in the next Native America Calling.
This program is supported by AmeriCorps Vista. You can kickstart your career by joining thousands of AmeriCorps members in the VISTA program serving to alleviate poverty. AmeriCorps members help organizations make change right in their own community. A service opportunity that fits your ambition can be found at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA today. That's AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking with author Tommy Orange about his new novel, Wandering Stars. Have you read it yet? If so, who's your favorite character? Jude Starr, the patriarch of the family, his son Charles, his granddaughter Victoria, or maybe one of Victoria's daughters, Opal or Jackie? Tell us who you most relate to by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Tommy, welcome back. And there's a lot of heaviness to these stories and these different narratives, these different perspectives that we talked about before the break. And what's the inspiration that you were going for here? And what are some issues and some points and some elements of the story that we can really celebrate and think of ourselves as Native people collectively and just honor these traditions and these histories?
I think sometimes... the story of urban Native people is there is a disconnection sometimes from tribe. Relocation happened in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and we started up kind of some of these intertribal communities and went through a lot to survive by the time we landed in cities and started up families. And sometimes this part of history is not looked at. This boarding school history, Native people know. We know what happened, but it's not really taught. And then you have non-Native people trying to qualify who's the real Native and who isn't. And often this piece of history, where for decades they punished us if we spoke our languages and a lot of kids were taken away from their families, and it feels like the burden is put on us, or like there's a failing on our part or a weak connection to our own heritage. And without this piece of history about what happened, it's not really fair to judge people who are trying to keep connection or, celebrate their own heritage in what ways they can, because so much was done to attempt to erase us. So I think there's all these thriving urban Native communities. And I wanted to write about the connection to history that is often not looked at.
Tell me, who's your favorite character in Wandering Stars?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I think in there, I liked Opal the best. I think I was writing from a really personal place internally when I wrote Charles Starr's chapter. So I think I have an affinity to that piece of writing. But I don't know if I could pick a favorite character.
Well, what's interesting also is Wandering Stars is definitely a prequel in some ways to There, but it also has elements of a sequel. So for somebody who's never read either of your books, what do you recommend reading first?
There, and then Wandering Stars is the standard way to do it. But there is a way to read it where you read the before part in Wandering Stars first, There second, and then part two and three of Wandering Stars after that. And it would work sequentially like that as well.
I like that idea. That's really good. But you definitely have to do some homework to know where to stop and where to start up again, don't you think?
Yeah, I could see a future version of the book where they just put it all together like that, so you don't have to jump around so much.
Right, yeah. Now, there's some really interesting pop culture elements too. I mean, you have all this great historical narrative, but then we go up to the contemporary and you have some of the characters are watching YouTube and they're using urban slang. And the brothers in the book, they're big into that cult classic film Donnie Darko. And tell us about that and why you chose that movie for your characters to relate to.
I'm not sure when I decided for sure that would be a favorite movie of theirs. There's this thing that one of the characters, Lonnie, is the youngest brother. He talks about building belief from kind of this center place, like between his stomach and his heart. And there's this weird part in Donnie Darko where like these like liquidy worm-like things come out from the middle of their bodies. And I just imagined if the brothers were watching it and they had no context for it, it's one of those movies that at a certain point it could have come on TV. So I just imagined that they kind of got obsessed with it and had their own connection to it outside of like anyone telling them to watch it, because they'll feel like they discovered it on their own. And there's just a lot of weird, dark, funny stuff that I could see them seeing in the movie and sort of connecting over.
Yeah, there really is. And Tommy, another recurring theme in the book is addiction. And many of the characters struggle with different forms of addiction. And I'm curious, for somebody reading the book who might be in recovery, were you thinking about them and what their journey might be like in approaching that with your writing as well, to kind of offer maybe some guidance or some support in any way?
Well, I definitely, you know, when they're there, we get a sort of open ending and maybe a tragic ending. And there's not that much resolve. And I knew this book was going to be the end of this series. And I wanted to end it with resolve. So even though there is a struggle with addiction, without ruining the ending, there is resolve. I can speak to that. And so anybody who knows what it's like to go through struggles with addiction, I do attend to what solutions there might be, and how one of the main characters, makes a path toward healing.
Well, I appreciate how you mentioned the open-endedness of There, because when I first read There, it was actually a really good friend of mine who's really into reading, and he recommended I read There. And after we both read the book and we talked about it, and he really liked that open-endedness, and I was like, well, what happens next kind of thing? And so was that part of the reason? I mean, when you there's a resolution at the end of Wandering Stars, and did you feel that was important then to really cover that, as opposed to leaving that open-endedness of there, or was it more of just like a stylistic concern?
I think when I finished when I was finishing writing there, I wasn't feeling very much hope in the world. This was during Standing Rock. This is literally when I was finishing there. Standing Rock was happening and Trump was getting elected into office. And it felt like a hopeless time. And I think that shaped how I wrote the end of there. And I think this time around, not that I think the world is all rosy now. I think I needed to write something that had hope in it because I need to feel hope right now.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And you also have, there's a lot of spirituality in the book, and specifically Native American church comes up repeatedly throughout the stories. Why is that?
So my dad is, you know, my parents met at a Paiute commune in the 70s, and it's been a part of my life. My dad is in Native American church. It's sort of been a big part of my life. So I wanted to find a way to write about it. And a lot of people that were, you know, figuring out how to survive in these pretty harsh times, especially these prisoners when they came back from the prison castle and just trying to figure out life. This Native American church, which is relatively recent to the area, came up from Mexico, brought by Quanah Parker. It really took hold for a lot of people and gave people something to believe in, something to practice. And it felt like a way to connect to older traditions at the same time. So I wanted to try to find a way to write about it, but it also felt true to the time that I was already writing about.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting as well, Tommy. Let's talk a little bit about just the writing process. And I hear stories of, you know, you were so successful with There, your debut novel, and then you've got the follow-up. And was it different, you know, after having that success with There, and now I would imagine you had deadlines and you had publishers who were really involved. And did that help the creative process for you, or did it hinder you, or did it make any difference?
Well, the part that you just spoke to was not necessarily something that was a problem, or it didn't complicate things. I love my publisher and my editor, and I think the challenge actually was having a successful book and trying to write something that, you know, is as good or better is sort of the sophomore effort, right? When sort of, I think it first was used in the music industry when there's a big album that comes out, and the follow-up effort is always sort of cursed to not do as well. And that's true of sequels. A lot of times people compare, when they compare two things, the sequel's not as good. And so I sort of set myself up for a big challenge in doing a sequel. And having had this success, it did feel like it was a lot harder to write this book. I think there's a sort of joke where two characters are talking about the sequel to Donnie Darko, which a lot of people don't even know about. It bombed so bad that people don't even know it exists. But there's a really bad sequel to Donnie Darko out there. And one of the characters is saying, I think most sequels are bad. So I'm sort of like commenting on the challenge of following up there. I think there was, you know, part 2 years of it was written during a global pandemic, which was not necessarily a great period of writing for me. You know, writing books is already pretty hard. So there was a lot of different challenges this time around. I certainly didn't feel like I got some like big boost of confidence because of their success. If anything, I sort of returned to the same doubts that I had when I was writing the first book.
Oh, really? Wow. Now, Tommy, tell me a little bit about just how you write. I mean, I hear sometimes writers are really diligent and they write a certain number of hours a day at a certain time. And do you work like that? Or are you a little bit more laissez-faire with the approach? And then how do you, I mean, do you do it all like on a laptop, or do you write some notes by hand? What's your process like?
So I write best in the morning and at night. Definitely morning more so than night. But I don't have a super consistent schedule. I write really well in hotel rooms. I only write on a laptop or into my phone. One interesting part about my writing process is that running is part of my writing process. So if I'm sort of stuck at something, when I'm on a run, often like, you know, an hour in, I'll think of something that I couldn't think of while I was at my laptop, and I'll write a note. So I have thousands of notes in my phone that end up going into the book, and I can think kind of as the bigger structure of the book better when I'm running than when I'm at the page. So that is a part of my writing process as well.
What do you think it is about a hotel room that helps with the creative process?
I think it just feels really isolated, and I don't know. I've sort of been forced into figuring out writing in hotel rooms because I've traveled a lot since There came out. But I've come to love it. I've even to work on Wandering Stars, I would spend days at a hotel just writing the whole time.
Mm. And you include some autobiographical elements. I mean, you just shared that you're a runner, and one of your characters in Wandering Stars is a runner. And then also one of the characters is a roller hockey player, and you were a very competitive roller hockey player as a teenager. Tell us about that connection with, you know, these activities and exercise and sports, and how those are reflected in your writing.
Yeah, actually my roller hockey career or connections is how I ended up working in the Native community in Oakland. So I was born and raised in Oakland, and my dad didn't raise us in the urban Native community in Oakland. We would go back to Oklahoma to see family on school breaks, and there was like one other Native family that we would see a lot. And then people would visit and people would stay with us. But I didn't know that there was this history of a Native community in Oakland. So I played competitive roller hockey from the age of about 14 to like 25 or something. Traveled all over the country, played in tournaments, and I got sponsored by a company when I was 16. So I was pretty serious about it. There was a pro team in Oakland called the Oakland Skates. And it didn't seem crazy to think that I could, you know, maybe eventually play pro. That was something that, and then of course the sport died in the early 2000s. But there's two brothers from Philadelphia who started up in the 90s in rollerblading and roller hockey's heyday. They started this rink that was near where the Oakland Skates played. And this is the rink that I grew up going to. And when I graduated from college, my undergrad's in sound engineering, I needed to just work. And I became a reader and a writer for the first time, working part-time at a used bookstore. And these brothers had a cousin who worked at the Native American Health Center in Oakland. And so they just knew I needed a job. And they recommended me. And it was the beginning of me working there for almost a decade. I started off doing data entry and eventually did a lot of different things and became a part of this community I didn't even know existed. So writing there was sort of the synthesis of becoming a writer and reader and becoming a part of this Native community that I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. And Tommy, since writing there and now Wandering Stars, I mean, have you gotten connected with relatives that you didn't know about, Southern Cheyenne people in Oklahoma and elsewhere?
Not necessarily. There was there's one woman who's an amazing leader, Cheyenne woman named Henrietta Mann, that I got an award a while back from the Tulsa Library, and reading her book was a really powerful thing for me. But not other than that, no.
All right. Well, we know Henrietta Mann well on Native America Calling. Of course, she, like you, is a legend in Native America. And Tommy, we're going to take another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about your writing and about your new day, your follow-up here to There, There, Wandering Stars. And I encourage listeners, give us a call. We've got the phone lines open. If you'd like to ask Tommy a question, if you've got a comment, if you've got an insight to share, either about one of his books or maybe some of the historical issues we're talking about today, give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by Archaeology Southwest. Did you know almost all major archaeological sites in the Southwest have been looted or vandalized? Looting and vandalism impact Indigenous people, past, present, and future. Every day, countless Native American cultural items are lost or damaged forever through looting and vandalism. Federal and tribal laws protect archaeological resources. More information about ending archaeological resource crime and how to submit a tip at savehistory.org and on social media at savehistory.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking with Cheyenne and Arapaho author Tommy Orange. His latest novel, Wandering Stars, is both a prequel and a sequel to There, There. If you're familiar with the characters or their stories, join our conversation. How do you connect with urban Native life and identity issues portrayed in Tommy's novels, Wandering Stars and There, There? Our phone number here at the studio, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a caller now. Chanupa, listening on Keeley Radio in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Chanupa.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Sean. And Tommy, Pidista, Nawich. Hey, brother, I wanted to ask you a question. This is real serious. There's a book out there that I've written about. It's called Voices in the Wilderness. Now, is there a possibility that in your writing you might ever take on the challenge about writing about the freedoms and independence that a lot of people pursue, but then nobody ever talks about them, even on national airwaves. Sean, on the other hand, has certain dialogues about issues pertaining to that. Like they say in Lakota, Wewash ake tankikia, iachuk te hanta, oyate kilena, tokata kya, wewashka, wichakuye. So that's a better saying than our language. Just like the Titista language, which is Cheyenne. I'm part Cheyenne. I go back up to Lame Deer to visit my people. So in the future, will there ever be a novel that you might create about the freedoms of independence that are getting taken away from a lot of people other than just describing it?
All right. Thanks for that call, Chanupa. That's a good question. Tommy, what's your thought on that? Maybe a future novel about freedoms of independence and, you know, we're living in challenging times right now politically, and that does it's reflected in some of your writing. But have you thought about maybe diving into that issue more?
I'm certainly open to it. Right now, I'm working on a third book. I can't share too much about it now. It's a contemporary book that takes place in Oakland, and I've just finished the screenplay for a feature film. But I'm certainly open to, I hope I have a long career and I write many books, and I hope I can address a lot of different things that are affecting Native people in this country.
Okay, so this is cool, Tommy. Screenplay, feature film, and also I understand you can't talk a lot about this, but you can at least mention that there is possibly a television series coming out with regard to There, There?
Yes. So originally, shortly after I sold There, one production company had the TV rights for a couple years, and then they didn't renew it, and the show didn't happen. And but it recently, 2 years ago, somebody got the option again, and it's been in development. Kind of got delayed by the writer's strike, and it just got renewed again. So it's very promising. It still has a little ways to go till I can talk about it, until it seems like it'll be a real thing. But there's reason to hope that it could become a TV show.
All right. Well, we'll be hoping for sure. And maybe you could come back once we have a little more information and share it with our listeners. That'd be awesome, Tommy. Also, Tommy, I want to ask you, what kind of feedback do you get from your readers now, both Native and non-Native alike? What are their thoughts, and what do they tell you after reading your stories?
You know, Wandering Stars is so new, I don't really know what the reaction is going to be. The critics are, you know, liking it. but I don't, you know, I had a lot of years of going around and meeting readers of there and got to, you know, see their reaction. There's a common thread with Native people is just feeling really happy about feeling seen in a book and speaking to some of the issues that I speak to with the readers, just connecting in emotional and impactful ways. So that was, you know, kind of an amazing thing to get to see with there. So I'm hoping, you know, there's a similar reaction with Wandering Stars. There's certainly, you know, heavy topics in both books, and sometimes the non-native reaction is really focused on how sad the whole thing is. And so that's been like the big difference between Native audience and non-Native audiences. Native audiences just are really excited about this, our stories being told. And there's a little bit of a focus on sadness from non-Native people.
From non-Natives. Interesting. And Tommy, you mentioned critics, and how much attention do you pay to those book reviews and what the critics say? I mean, do you take that with a grain of salt, or what's your strategy?
You know, the first time around with there, I think I read most of the reviews, and it would often come through, like my publicist or my agent would tell me that this is a good review, so I'd read it. And I'm being a little bit more selective this time around. I find that the good praise, it doesn't always stick, and the bad critiques, they do stick. The good things just kind of come and go, and then I forget them, and the bad things just haunt me. And then even sometimes the way non-Native people try to praise or talk about the work can sometimes not feel good either. So I'm being a little more selective this time around.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many reviews out there. I imagine you just have to kind of be selective. You spend all day reading reviews with as much buzz as Wandering Stars is getting, Tommy. Let's take another caller, Jin, listening online in East Texas. Hello, Jin. Have you read Wandering Stars yet?
No, but I've had there in my library for a couple of years, or since it first came out. And I really do. I was so happy to see that he was featured on CBS on Saturday morning. I nearly fell off my chair. And to see on corporate TV this sort of thing makes my heart so glad. I'm a Cherokee from East Texas, and there's so many good films being made nowadays, and I'm just so hopeful, and I think that you definitely should stick with the good praise because you deserve it. And I was just so happy to see you on CBS, and I'm always happy to see everything that's happening nowadays, and I'm trying to write another chapter in my book, and, you know, it's a hard thing to have people read it and then you wonder how it's going to be accepted, but just do it. And that's my motto. Thank you, Tommy.
Thanks for that call, Jen. Tommy, what would you like to say to Jen?
Just, I that makes me happy that you get that much happiness from seeing something like that. And I think I share your happiness with what's going on with our visibility and our stories being celebrated and shared in books and TV and movies. I think it's a really exciting time for representation for us. Being on TV is not something that I necessarily want to do, but it's one of those guaranteed things that'll sell a lot of books. And so actually, I what she's referencing, they brought me out to the prison castle in St. Augustine, Florida, to do this CBS interview. So I was writing this part of the book during the pandemic, so I couldn't go to do research. I couldn't go see the prison castle in person. So this, my first time seeing it was also me being interviewed by CBS and like walking around the prison mm-hmm. castle grounds with the CBS correspondent. And that was a really surreal experience, and it was really powerful to be able to visit that place.
I'll bet. Yeah, like totally like full circle for your people in your book and everything. Tommy, when I talk to you and I listen to you, and you have a sense of humility and reserve, and I feel like it hasn't really sunken in for you yet that that you are such a celebrated and praised author. And like you mentioned, like, oh, the praise, it kind of feels weird and things like that. And why do you think that is? I mean, am I right? Like, do you come sometimes kind of just not really quite realize, hey, this is all real. This is really my life now. I'm this famous author.
It's really hard to make that feel real. I sort of keep it as like abstract information. It's been long enough now that like, when it first happened, I was a little more deer in the headlights, and now like I know that it's a reality, but it's hard to feel it, if that makes sense. I don't go around. It doesn't make me necessarily feel better or change the personal struggles that I have. And, you know, the world is still really, you know, complex and difficult place to live. And it doesn't change a lot of the things that matter most. I'm really grateful that I get to write for a living. That's probably one of the biggest differences that it's made. But the idea that I'm a famous Native author, it just feels abstract to me, if that makes any sense.
What do you think you'd be doing if you weren't selling best-selling novels right now? Coaching roller hockey maybe somewhere?
I'd probably still be working in nonprofit. I was doing digital storytelling before I sold my book. And I don't know if I'd still be doing that, because that almost seems old fashioned now. I don't know. Maybe I'd be an Uber driver. I really don't know.
You'd be busy in Oakland, I'll bet, with all that traffic over there. Tell me, I want to share what really moved me the most in Wandering Stars and what really helped me. And it really resonates with me, especially as I get older. And one of your characters, Victoria, she's struggling with her children, and she's asking, you know, will they be capable of surviving like the old ones, or will they not know if they're capable of surviving? And it really hit home to me, because I think of myself, and I sometimes compare myself to my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation, and I think, you know, what am I going to have to offer? You know, I don't have that knowledge. I don't have that cultural history. I don't have those perspectives. But what was so beautiful in your writing is the answer I'm looking for, and really what really ultimately we pass down, it's not so much the stories, or the culture. We do to an extent, but what really comes out is love. We pass love down, and you documented that so well. You wrote that so well, and it was like this aha moment for me. I just thought to myself, that's what I have to do, and I can do that. I might not know all the stories that my grandparents knew. I might not know the language, but I can love just as strongly as them. And that's what I really took away. And I want to thank you, Tommy, because you really helped me come to that realization.
Oh, thank you, Sean. That's an incredible thing to hear. And I think there's a lot of values that are a part of our culture, like generosity, for example. Like Cheyenne people, you know, have a spirit of generosity. And sometimes those big things like love and generosity, we don't tie them to culture in the same way, but they are very much a part of our, you know, the ways that we pass things down.
Yeah, love transcends all. It's such a powerful message. And Tommy, we've got a couple minutes before we wrap up, and let's talk about your family a little bit, and just what they think of your career and what kind of support you get at home.
You know, everyone's just proud. There's, you know, the family is a complicated thing, and there are ways that it hasn't made any difference, and there are relationships that are broken, and, you know, family is just a very complicated thing for me right now.
Well, another interesting thing I learned from reading Wandering Stars is that an eagle's cry is actually a red-tailed hawk. That was pointed out to me. So that's some good information to take home as well, Tommy. So you just got a lot of really good information just packed into this book, and just, again, the perspectives and just everything else, the way it all weaves together. So Geez, I wish we could talk more about some of your future projects. But aside from writing, what else interests you and what other areas do you want to pursue in your life?
You know, besides running, being with my family, you know, I'm doing this screenplay. I've always loved movies. I hope to move more into that. I'm actually playing roller hockey again in an old man's league in Oakland at the same rink that I grew up playing in. So that's not necessarily a future endeavor. It was just something that I do, you know, every Thursday that I really enjoy.
That's super exciting. Well, one of the reasons that whole narrative really stuck with me is I grew up playing hockey. I played ice hockey. I didn't play roller hockey, but anything related to hockey just gets my attention. And did you ever play ice hockey as well, or were you always just on rollerblades?
I played a few seasons, and I had done so much roller hockey by the time I played, I just never transitioned.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting transition to make for sure. And do you run every day, Tommy?
I do. I run my dogs before I take my son to school, and sometimes I'll run again later in the day. So I do love doing that.
Now, you mentioned Native author Louise Erdrich a couple of times in Wandering Stars. And are you a big fan of hers? And who are some other authors that you like to read?
Yeah, Louise is I'm a huge fan of her work. A book that actually I felt like Wandering Stars is in conversation with is Oscar Hokea's Calling for a Blanket Dance. I read that while I was figuring out some structural stuff in Wandering Stars, and it really helped me to clarify doing this generational saga structure. That's just a fantastic book. Everyone should read it. But it also, it feels like a little bit of conversation with my book, and it, like I said, it really helped me to think about structure.
Well, Tommy, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. I have enjoyed talking with you so much. It's been such a wonderful conversation, and I just want to wish you all the best of luck going forward, and please, safe travels wherever you go.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Listeners, please join us again tomorrow for a look at political issues shaping up this election season. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day, and thank you for listening to the one, the only Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Orik Mashat or Ibdak Mashat. New put at the go Ibdak, Mamdam Sapa Gugu Sidat, a Mashaka Paichum Bohimat, Pihai Chochuk the Dut, a Mokudu the Duck. Ibdak Mumkidak, Pum Sam Chigam Famira. I'm go warm in Yoka Gugu Dab, Amjadaka Famira, Doki. By just much of Amjad, Moniga, Mama Kamapomia, a Monig Healthcare.gov. A Moya Gugu, the Hamako Gigi Sikor Sikor, Wai Kamako Gigi, Gokutus Homok Jude. Ido Amjad him of Medicare to Medicaid Hachipkan.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.